Hello, my name is Daniel Marino, and this is the Motion Martial Arts Podcast. So Dave and I are back after a pretty long break. This is the first episode we've released in a while, but there will be more to come soon. And it's on the subject of compliance in martial arts training. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope that you enjoy. What's up, everybody? Been a while since we've done an episode, but I got Dave, me and Dave are here, and we're ready to bring back the Motion Martial Arts Podcast.
So today we're going to talk about compliance and training, which is an interesting topic to discuss. So I don't know really where to start, but obviously everybody who trains martial arts has definitely been in a situation where you're training with a compliant person, because that's the bulk of the training that you do, right? Mm-hmm. So like if you're drilling a technique or learning a technique or whatever, or practicing technique, it's always with somebody who, for the most part, who's compliant. Now, I'm sure everybody's experienced that bad training partner who resists even in drilling and practicing, but that's obviously the bulk of what our training time is spent doing.
Yeah, for good reason too, right? So it's like compliance, let's say, holds two purposes. Learning purposes, meaning, you know, if you're learning something new, right, it's helpful to do it, you know, comply with a compliant partner.
Yeah.
And the second is safety, right? You know, if resistance, of course, scales, right? There's levels of resistance we can give each other. So total compliance, in my opinion, is mostly something that's going to have a purpose, you know, for learning something new. But in terms of like the safety aspect of it too, it's that, you know, you can't, no matter how hard you train, you know, you can't be going 100% all the time without being a lot of wear and tear on your body.
Yeah.
You know, if you're long-term in your training, you know, you have to be aware of that. So big thing for me, coming from a karate background especially, is that I just think it's very, very important that people are aware of the compliance in their training. And it was my experience specifically in the karate world that sometimes the training is so compliant that it's like you forget that it's even there. And you have to remind yourself that it's like, hey, doing this against resistance is going to be different. It's going to be totally different.
Obviously, jiu-jitsu does not have that same issue, because nope. We spar regularly, and in sparring, both of you are resisting each other, right? So,
yep.
And obviously, grappling arts allow a level of competitive sparring resistance training that striking arts, for the most part, do not allow, because
can't tap out from a knockout, right?
Yeah, exactly. No. So if you do get knocked out, not everybody chooses to, but you should be out for a period of time as you recover, right? And,
sure.
And yeah. That's the thing, right? It's like, so it's a little easier in a grappling environment to do non-compliant training.
Mm-hmm.
It's
honestly, also just the scale too, right? Like, that's the thing. You can go, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, of course, but you can go very hard grappling until the tap, right? And then stop.
To a certain extent. So this is a personal opinion. I personally think that there's a little bit of a misunderstanding of what going 100% is in jiu-jitsu.
Sure.
But some of this is just my opinion, so who cares, you know? At the end of the day, it's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem is that going 100% has, in most people's mind, been the idea of emptying your gas tank.
Mm-hmm.
So going physically exerting yourself to the point of exhaustion, which I disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
I believe going 100% is using only your A game best techniques from every position.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, you can go hard and reinforce that with whatever your athletic gifts are, but to me, that's actually going 100%. Fighting really, really hard with bad technique is just bad strategy and bad technique.
Yeah.
So I don't consider that going 100%. I just consider that a hard workout. And I think that not everybody agrees with me, and that's okay. It's just my opinion, like I said, you know?
Yeah. But you can go really hard.
Yeah, like, I mean, I trained today and I had some matches where I was like
this other person is going as hard as they want, and I'm not going very hard at all, and I don't really particularly care because I'm going to catch them in a submission. And then I trained with some guys that are way better than me, and it was the opposite. And I was like, I'm fighting harder than I like. Yes, I'm still, for the most part, using technique and trying to use my best stuff, but they're not fighting as hard as I need to. Yeah. And again, as the levels get higher, you know, I'm a brown belt, and these guys that were beating me up, and they're black belts. Mm-hmm. And they're physically bigger than me and more athletic than me, but like both of us are probably going harder, but at the same time, because the technique is cleaner, it still maintains a level of safety. And I think that both people have a lot they are holding in reserve, mm-hmm. as far as a gas tank and physicality, because again, it's just bad strategy. You're just going to get yourself tired.
Yeah, definitely. You know, so I guess just,
but you can go harder. The
striking spar, you know, yeah, it's yeah, like yeah. that, you know, I, with my students, we pretty much only do light contact sparring, yeah. right? And, you know, it's like, cause I teach most of the young people, it's what's better for them physically. And, you know, there are issues that obviously come up with that, right? Because you don't want to be giving them negative muscle memory. Because I've actually had this experience before, yeah. where I've had been in a fight where I've had to defend myself, and I pulled my punch. I scored a perfect point because I was under a lot of pressure, right? You know, yeah, I wasn't thinking clearly about what I was doing, so I reverted back to what felt most natural, what I'd done most in my training, and that was that light hit. Now, to say, I still think that even light sparring is worthwhile. I just think you need to be aware of the compliance in it. And personally, where I've gone with my training and my teaching is that I've really prioritized hitting pads, because you know you can hit full contact right on the pads, right? Yeah. And when you do a lot of that to try to, you know, create that good muscle memory that we want, you know, self-defense or combat sport purposes. And then to supplement that, because you also need the timing and the footwork and the movement, you know, then we have the light sparring. Now, obviously, I'm not training people for the ring. I'm not training people to be fighters or anything like that. It's just martial arts. If you were to be training for a combat sport, like kickboxing, Muay Thai, MMA, you know, I think that you would have to be doing a lot more hard sparring to really prepare you for that kind of fighting. But more for self-defense purposes, and also just out of interest, of personal interest in martial arts, I do think that you can find a good balance where, you know, you're doing a lot of pad work and supplementing it with light sparring. And then for technique development, you have maybe some compliant drills, right? Where you do something very specific with a partner. It's allowing the technique to succeed. But
I mean, my striking experience is significantly less than yours. Sure. I did Kenpo karate when I was a kid, and I've probably done 12 Muay Thai private lessons in the last little bit of period of time.
Cool.
3 months or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know. All I can really talk about from a jiu-jitsu perspective, but I've actually given this a lot of thought of what I think is, and again, who cares ultimately what my opinion is at the end of the day, but my opinion of what I think the training protocol should be in jiu-jitsu as people develop it, at least if they were my students, which is, I think as a beginner, you need all of the technique to be compliant where the other person is letting you work around it. But as you progress and start to improve, I think that there needs to be kind of like almost dynamic drilling and practicing of techniques,
mm-hmm.
because things do not happen so statically.
Yeah.
And like that's the thing, is that you have to originate like that or nobody's going to ever learn anything.
Mm-hmm.
But as the level increases, I think that the techniques need to be learned in a more dynamic way.
Mm-hmm.
So like that means stringing three things together in a way where, and I have training partners that this is the case, where I can grab them and be like, hey, let me try something on you. And they already know that in slow motion, as I'm showing them what I want to try, they are going to show me what their next reaction would be. So mm-hmm. I can then be like, oh, okay. So if you did that when I went for this guard pass, I would react like this, and I would end up maybe transitioning to neon belly instead of taking the side mount. Or if you react that way on the side mount transition, I'm going to pin your arm a certain way, which then allows me to attack this choke or this arm attack on the other arm or this control. And then you start to string things together. Well, I think that's what allows for a lot of skill development as for people that are more serious about it and long term with it. Again, yeah. I don't think you can do it with a beginner. Mm-hmm. I think it would just lead to a lot of injuries.
Sure.
But then, like, I think that that's kind of what needs to happen personally as the next evolution of teaching in martial arts, which is, like, don't just teach, like... And some martial arts do this, right? So striking does this all the time. It's like...
Yeah.
And again, my striking is very, very basic, but, like, it's jab, cross, hook, right?
Sure.
So jab, cross, hook, that's the whole... That's making dynamic, compliant drilling.
Yeah.
Right? Even with the pads.
Yeah.
Right? It's dynamic, compliant drilling. I think that that needs to be continued to pushed and be pushed and reinforced and taken to the next step.
Yeah.
And that's how the transition of compliant training should be, instead of like a, they do this, you do this. You stand here like this and grab mm-hmm. this while this other person does this. Because that's not how it's going to be in the chaos of a real life situation if you're practicing for self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
If you're practicing for sport, it's not going to be like that.
Sure.
If you're just practicing for the sake of practicing, which is fine, you probably still have a goal, and your goal is probably to be good.
Yeah.
Even if you're just like, oh, I just do the martial arts because I think it's fun, and I like it, and I want to get in shape, you probably still want to be good at it.
Of course, yeah.
So to be good at it, I think that you have to lead to this sort of dynamic, compliant training for skill acquisition, and then...
And that's the fun part, right? You know, it's like, even
to a certain extent,
even if you just want to enjoy it, like, there's few things I think are more enjoyable than getting good. Right? You know, it's like, it's really, it's rewarding.
But that also has to be reinforced by then, and again, it's easier in jiu-jitsu than it is in wrestling and judo, than it is in sambo and other grappling arts,
sure.
than it is in the striking arts. But then you have to do the sparring.
Sure.
You have to do the sparring. And again, there's a means to do the striking sparring that you can probably speak to better than I can.
Yeah.
But there is a means, right, to do it. You get headgear, you get heavier gloves, shin pads, right? Mm-hmm. They have that, the body block thing that you can wear around your waist, right? Which, again, it slows you down, but that allows for both people to throw with a little bit more power than is possible
without
the gear. What I've
read about, gear, though, is that, you know, the headgear makes your head bigger, right? So you take more punches, and might help somewhat, but, you know, you're still, you know, getting hit in the head, getting shut, getting your brain shook around. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's hard sparring, you know, is a difficult thing. And it's just not going to be for everyone. You know what I mean? But
and again, that's fine.
But I think that you can still integrate lighter sparring into your training.
I mean,
along with other...
We're gonna get really off on a tangent with what is even hard training.
Sure.
It's so subjective, right? So, like, I mean, no offense to anybody who trains with me that is about to listen to this conversation, right? But, like, if I'm training with a white or a blue belt
mm-hmm.
and they're going really hard, why do I care?
Mm-hmm.
I don't. So what's the point of me going hard back?
Yeah.
Now, are there white and blue belts that are really good? Yes, they exist. More so probably blue belts than white belts. But if a white belt's really good, he probably has some sort of prior experience in something else.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, as a skilled, experienced person, you kind of know that. So it's like, well, what's the point of turning it on really hard other than to just be kind of like, it's kind of like teaching somebody a lesson, but for what? Like, you're just teaching them the lesson of, like, I can do things to you for what? It's like giving, it's like giving somebody a spanking. It doesn't do anything beneficial, in my opinion.
Sure.
Right? So, like, it's like, what is hard training? When do you train hard? Who do you train hard with?
Yeah.
And then now you start to get into things where I'm like, because I realize this now more as I've gotten better. I'm like, how often was I having these training sessions as a blue belt and sometimes maybe as a purple, I think it was probably a little less as a purple belt, but probably still happened 100% as a purple belt. It happened where I'm training with somebody who's way more skilled than me and they're just being nice, so I get something out of the training, because if they just go hard, they're just going to destroy me.
Yeah, that's not productive.
Yeah, exactly. So, like the thing is like...
Might be productive for them, but...
I don't even know if it's productive for them, because, like, okay, I've proven what I already knew, that I'm much better than this person who's done it less than me, or I have these physical advantages of her, or whatever it is, right? Yeah. So yeah, maybe you need to do it every once in a while to just reinforce that you're good, but why wouldn't you just do those with the other people that are around your skill level so you both improve more?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so, it's... I think that there's this fear of hard training because, again, it's this subjective thing, for one. The second thing is, and again, sorry if you train with me, or sorry if you're a white belt or blue belt in jiu-jitsu and you're listening to this. There's a lot of not knowing. So I'm going to, because I don't know what to do from this position, I'm going to go absolutely bonkers and nuts.
Yeah.
And potentially do something crazy, and then somebody gets hurt. And that again, that's not... Nobody's getting better from that, in my opinion. They're not.
Yeah.
But there, again, even with that, there is something to be said, because in a fight or a self-defense situation, the other person's not going to be concerned about your safety. Just like in a competitive situation, for the most part, people aren't going to be concerned about your safety. Not 100%. There's plenty of people that I know that are super nice people and good, down-to-earth people, and... they are genuinely feel bad if they are like, I had to hold on to this sub and crank it longer than I want it because mm-hmm. this person didn't tap. There's people that I know that have, like, heard pops and cracks on submissions. The person didn't tap and they let it go not to do other harm. And they're like, this guy doesn't want to tap. What do you want me to do? You want me to cripple you so your arm will never work ever again? Like, yeah. I'm not going to do that for... I don't want to do that. Sure. There's other people that go, if this person wants to do this to their body... I'm not going to feel bad about it, but I think that's a small
group of people. Yeah, it's hard to put yourself in that place to think about it. It's like, which... But yeah, because it's kind of manipulative at a certain point. It's like, I'm not going to tap. I'm going to challenge you. Like, are you actually going to break my arm, dude?
But the thing is that I think, and again, sparring it hard is relative. I think that people need that.
Yeah,
to a certain extent, everybody.
Well, I think the striking thing, though, you know, by sparring hard, I mean just hitting harder, right? You know. So yeah. Controlled contact is always...
Again, I can't speak to the striking thing very well. But I have to assume that there is some way to make that happen. I just don't know how.
The best that I've come up with about it is just... And, you know, and I acknowledge it's not ideal, you know, is that this isn't the way that you probably would want to train if you were kickboxer, you know. If you were if you were training for full contact competition, you probably want to fight with a lot, you want to train with a lot more contact to prepare you for it. But in my opinion, you know, for people that aren't interested in that, and I teach a lot of kids, you know, so obviously it's not something that they or their parents generally want them doing. I think that the best that you can get, you know, if you don't want to do that, right, is you do the light sparring. But you spend a lot of time hitting pads, and especially hitting pads, as you were talking about, in a dynamic way, moving target, using focus mitts and things like that. It really simulates the way that you would want to hit if you were going full contact. But then when, you know, because you also need that aspect of your training where you're fighting a resisting opponent, where you need, you know, you need the timing to actually get that shot in. But the way that we do it is that when you get the shot in, you pull the punch, right? Where you're not hitting hard. And, you know, it's not an ideal solution, but in my opinion, it's a very, very big improvement from what was my experience growing up doing karate and what is typical of the karate world in general, right? Where we spend a lot of time kicking and punching in the air, right? We spend a lot of time doing the light sparring. And it depends, of course, there's a wide range you'll find in the karate community. We spend less time hitting pads, especially hitting moving targets, things like that. And I think that sometimes a lot of the partner work, which is really, I guess, what we should, you know, the subject of the podcast being compliance, especially, that with karate, you have very common training method, you know, called one steps.
Yeah.
One step fighting is essentially the way it's typically done. And as always, there's a wide range to be found in the karate world. You know, not everybody does it the same way. Some people may do it better or worse. But the way that I grew up doing one steps is that somebody steps and does a single punch and freezes in place.
Yeah.
And then the other partner responds with like three or four techniques where they step and block and then do, you know, punch, punch, kick. And just something I think is important, because I didn't realize, I started when I was 9 years old. I started as a child, you know, I was doing those things well before I was ever an adult. It took me a long time to come to the conclusions that I have about it, is that you forget that the compliance is even there. It's like, well, what am I even doing here? It's like somebody, obviously someone is never going to step and throw a punch and freeze in place for you. So what's the point of doing this long, complicated combo to someone, to this imaginary opponent that's just standing there and letting you hit them? In my opinion, you're much better off doing some kind of low-intensity live training. You were talking about for beginners, right? You know, obviously I would say that the less experienced you are, the more compliance you're probably going to want to have in your training, because you're trying to learn new skills. But I'd say that even, this is the way that I teach, even with beginners, with brand new students, I will have them do some kind of sparring on their first day, but it's just very, it's very low intensity.
Yeah. So,
right? So, and that, as some people would be like, well, that's not really sparring. It's like, okay, yeah, I understand your point. You know, if it's like, just how you want to be introducing some element of unpredictability and some element of resistance, in my opinion, as early as possible.
Yeah. So, right? I mean, I do that when I teach a class for the most part.
Yeah.
And I just do positional training, that so it is sparring, but it's very positionally focused.
Just trying to get the mount or something.
Exactly. Yeah, like you hold the mount, you escape the mount, neither of you can submit right now.
Perfect. Yeah.
You start from the guard, you're on top, you're on bottom, try and keep him in the guard, try and get out of his guard and get on top, or try and get out of his guard and disengage, whatever. Yeah. So I mean, I definitely do the things like that, but again, like very controlled until they're at a certain skill level, because I just think to a certain extent you're going to reinforce possibly bad habits.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, it's almost to a certain extent at the beginning, you need a level of compliance, and then you can start to offer up more resistance. But again, even with the new technique, right? At this point, if I learn it where I'm working on a new technique, I need it to be very much like, you stand here and do this thing for me while I do this next thing.
Yeah.
Even if you're not actually feeling like you need to fall over and put your hands down on the mat right now, pretend that I did make you need to do that reaction for me right now, and then we'll talk later why you felt like that didn't happen. Okay, so you tilted the hands, I tilted you wrong, I didn't get your hands out on the ground. I'll develop that skill over time by practicing it. Now I'm in the tilt, now I'm understanding the reaction that I want for the next move once the hands are on the mat, whatever. You know, that description might be vague for some people, but some people might also understand what I'm saying with that. But like, yeah, I need a level of compliance, but then I also need to do it against somebody who's resisting me and doesn't want me to do whatever I want to do, or I'm never going to get it down.
Sure.
And like, this is the interesting dynamic, right? The, like, in the hard part. So like, I have to do it against resisting people to get good.
Mm-hmm.
What if I'm training jiu-jitsu or Muay Thai or karate or wrestling, whatever, just for self-defense? Like, okay, well, when we're training, by default, it's almost 100% to be done as a sport.
Sure.
That is the way it is done. So,
you kind of can't have rules without creating a sport. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like you almost need to understand from both perspectives.
Yeah.
And this is what I've been saying this to you recently a bunch. Yeah. Obviously, there's no podcast to back up the fact that I've been saying this. I'm at a point where I want a healthy balance between focusing on the self-defense fight stuff and also focusing on the sports stuff, because I think it needs to be a healthy balance. I think if you only always talk about the sport, then I'm not naive enough or ignorant enough to believe that, oh yeah, some guy is going to get into a street fight and pull worm guard. Nobody's going to do that. Anybody who thinks that's an idiot, nobody's going to do that.
Yeah.
Most people that train jujitsu, and I'm only going to speak about jujitsu, that are a purple belt are probably fine against most people if they get into a fight. I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that, I want to be very clear. An unskilled person in a fight. Not a skilled person.
And one person,
yeah. Yes. In a one-on-one fight against an unskilled person, I believe that most people that have reached a purple belt in jiu-jitsu or above are probably going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the white and blue belts, some would be fine, some wouldn't, right? But I don't think it makes sense, just like I'm saying. So, like, if they're only working on the sportive stuff, well, then they probably have never been heard, like, okay, you need to maintain these distances to be safe from strikes, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is where I want to be. And I think some of that stuff gets picked up regardless, but, like, okay, I want to be all the way in or all the way out, right? And just practicing that range. The more you practice the range, the more you're going to get comfortable in those ranges, yeah. And understand, okay, I'm at a safe distance right now where this person has to chase me a little bit to get into the range of punching, but when they do that, I'm going to come towards them, and then boom, it's going to be a collision that leads to an easy takedown.
Sure.
Or they're making the double leg easier, or the single leg easier, or the clinch easier, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to, if you want to just jiu-jitsu as a sport, to occasionally do the fight stuff.
Yep.
Right? Even if it put some gloves on occasionally and hit each other, everything.
Sure.
Now, on the flip side of that...
And you also just don't want the shock, right?
Yeah.
You know, if it's something you're not used to.
Exactly.
And that, you know, that causes people to freeze. And
exactly.
It can be dangerous.
And,
yeah.
and on the flip side of that, I don't think it's healthy if you're only doing the self-defense stuff and you're never sparring and you're never doing the sport.
Well, we have talked about that before.
So
I would say
a healthy balance.
I would say that people, they're like, I don't know if there exists people that only do the self-defense stuff.
I think there are.
Yeah.
And even in jiu-jitsu.
I always feel like they think that they do, but
I actually think that there is a fair amount in jiu-jitsu
okay.
that is doing that right now. And I think that they're lying to themselves, and I think it's unhealthy to spend all your time focus on this fictitious fight that may or may not happen.
Yeah, because
I think you it's
yeah.
if that's your primary focus, the self defense stuff, great. You need to do some training where you're just doing it like a sport, because the benefits of that are going to be huge too.
Sure,
but ultimately,
yeah.
at the end of the day. If I only obsess about the sport, I might not be making it fun. If I'm only obsessing about the fight, I might not be making it fun. Make it fun. I personally think a healthy balance of both is good.
Yeah.
I honestly probably, at this point, I'm not going to pretend. I am more interested probably in the sparring end, which is more representative of doing it as a sport. I think
mm-hmm.
that's more fun. But I'm also... 5 days a week, sometimes 6 times a week, working on the self-defense and fight-based stuff too.
Sure.
So, like, it's kind of easy for me to say what I'm saying, right? Because I have the time to devote
to
both.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, like, I'm probably spending, my guess is, when I'm actually drilling technique or teaching technique, I should say, most of it is stuff that's fight-based, probably 60% of it, and then probably 40% of it is stuff that's more based off of, this is just grappling against a skilled person, these are the things you do.
Well, listen, and this is, and we definitely have spoken about this in the past, you know, and it's a very important thing to acknowledge, is that you can try to simulate self-defense in your training as well as you can, but you never, you know, the only thing that's the real thing is the real thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think that you should be like, well, because we can't really get the real thing in our training, we should ignore it. I don't think that's the right approach to have. But like you're saying, though, you also shouldn't obsess over it. You need the sport aspect of it. You need to be fighting against another martial artist, right? Because that's where it gives you, you know, like some real resistance. And sure, there's there's rules involved, but there's also a lot of very, very transferable skills that have to be there. And you can't, you know, even with good self-defense drilling, and this should give you the striking perspective from it, that I do plenty of exercises with my students where it's tries to simulate like a criminal assault in some way. You know, here's a very good example. I have a drill where one partner is just trying to throw big open-handed slaps, right? Yeah. To simulate like somebody just winging haymakers at your head. And, you know, the other partner has to defend against that. You know, like, very, very different, right, than somebody doing, like, formal punching technique, right? I think it's a good drill. I think it's a really good thing to practice regularly. However, you know, it only can go so far to really simulate. You know, like, obviously someone is never going to there's no reason that they'll only throw haymakers at your head. There's any number of things that they also could do. And so it's only going to prepare you, you know, it's going to give you some skills that are very transferable, but you should, in the same class, you know, also have the students put on their gloves, right, and then do typical sparring with each other, because that develops different skills. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about, the same way that you can have both aspects to your training.
Yeah, I just think by default you kind of need both aspects, but at the same time, and again, this is very specific to jiu-jitsu, like I said, I think that if I took an average purple or brown or black belt, not even a high level guy, just an average one, against somebody who doesn't know anything, that's never trained anything, and they got into a fight, I think that they'd be fine, even if they've never ever done a single thing about closing the distance or learn the self-defense stuff, because they've at some point attempted to take somebody down who doesn't want to be taken down. So you're probably going to be able to get the person down.
Yeah.
Or if you don't want to go down, you don't have to put them down. They probably know how to do a standing guillotine. I'm sure that there's somebody who's like, oh, well, I'm tough and strong. I've never been guillotined, but I'm sure I could fight out of that. It's not so easy.
Sure.
But even off a guillotine, they probably know what a cement mixer is if they've done jiu-jitsu long enough. So if they wrap the neck and the guillotine's not working, they can just dump them with the cement mixer and put them on the back of their back, and that's probably the end of the fight anyway.
Sure, yeah, definitely a lot of transferable skill. And I won't argue that point. But at the same time, you know, and this is actually, when you say someone who doesn't have any experience, I think sometimes, you know, like the person who's likely to attack you maybe doesn't have any formal training. But, you know, often people who know how to fight a little bit just from doing it.
Yeah, of
you
course,
know?
Of
so
course.
It's like, it's definitely dangerous. And that's why, you know, just basic, like you're saying, average, and if you're saying the average purple belt probably has done some kind of punch protection, right, in their training.
Possibly. It's hard to know. Not every school does that. But again, when I...
But they could also probably get by without it.
So right? And when I say average, right, what I mean by that is literally the average purple belt. So there's obviously people that don't fall into that category because they're below average.
Sure.
So they're not prepared.
Yeah.
And there's people that are above average that are just freaking monsters who will be fine no matter what.
Yeah.
Right? So, like...
And the reality is you can take some punches and do your thing. Like, but
is also just like... And again, you know, some of this stuff is... It's life. Nobody's inhuman. Nobody's becomes this unstoppable monster. Jiu-jitsu is not some end-all, be-all thing that is going to make you all of a sudden undefeatable. Anybody who believes that jiu-jitsu is a one-stop shop for self-defense, I disagree with you. If you think it is, great. I don't personally agree with you. I think it's a great foundation. But if you're actually truly focused on wanting to have the best self-defense skills, I think you need to have a... My opinion, jiu-jitsu as your grappling art, you need to find a legitimate person at striking, whatever striking it is. Doesn't matter if it's karate, doesn't matter if it's Muay Thai, doesn't matter if it's boxing, kickboxing, what is it, Savate? I'm just listing ones, obviously. Yeah. But, like, whoever is legit in those and actually is training and teaching the right way, you need that. And then you also need to work with somebody who understands weapons legitimately. When I say that, I'm not necessarily talking about weapon defense. I'm talking about legitimately, like, learning, like, okay, this is how you should use a knife, and this is how somebody who knows how to use a knife is going to use it on you. This is how somebody who doesn't know a knife is going to use it on you. You're probably in a bad situation no matter what. Let's not pretend that we aren't.
Sure. This is how you handle a gun. This is safe gun handling techniques. This is how you shoot it accurately, right? This is how you clean it. This is how you handle it. Mm-hmm. If somebody pulls a gun on you, this is most likely how they're going to use it if their actual intent is to kill you mm-hmm. or harm you versus yeah. somebody who's using it to intimidate. You need to find people that actually specialize in that, sure. not somebody who's just like, well, I teach jiu-jitsu and my instructor taught me knife defense and I'm just teaching the same knife defense that have been taught since 1851 and we're going to pretend like it's going to work.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, show me the videos of it working, and then also, in addition to showing me the videos of it working, what was the context of when it did work? Did somebody get snuck up on, and that's yeah. they snuck up on the person who was holding the gun or knife, and they got it away? Was the person's intent maybe just to intimidate, not harm?
Yeah.
Because the reality, and again, we're getting kind of a little bit into a different conversation now almost, but like,
sure.
the thing is like, to have true self-defense, and again, this is just my opinion, is you need to be working with somebody who's legitimately a good striking instructor, somebody who's legitimately a good grappling instructor. I obviously am biased and lean towards jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. but wrestling, judo, sambo, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you need to actually, if you're actually truly invested in self-defense, then you also need to find somebody who can, or multiple people that can teach you the weapon stuff.
And you also need to acknowledge that any kind of act, like physical fighting, is kind of a small part of self-defense anyway. Because normally you can defend yourself yeah. much, much better with, you know, making of
good decisions,
and being and awareness of it the same way.
How you conduct yourself.
And these are things I have read about a little bit. I've always liked to be more knowledgeable about it, but just also, like, you know, criminal psychology, right, is a pretty well-developed field. As in, you know, that there are things that you can... basics you can learn about predatory behavior, about, you know, like the kind of ways that a criminal will interview you before to see whether or not you're going to be an easy target to be attacked. Like, these skills are all very relevant to self-defense yeah. and have nothing to do with martial arts.
So I think that one of the main changing points for me about, and I'm not saying that I don't think self-defense stuff is important, but one of the main changing points for me is that and again, I still think it's great. It's still a large chunk of what I teach, so this is not me talking trash on it. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the statistics, you're most likely to get into a physical altercation with somebody you know.
Yeah.
And you kind of already anticipate that this is coming.
Sure.
Because you've done something to wrong them in some way, or something that can be perceived
or,
as wrong.
Or there's a very clear pattern of behavior. Exactly. You're not like, it's going to be your neighbor or your spouse.
Exactly.
Or
so, like, you know. I think it's like, I think that, again, it's in the grand scheme of things, I actually only think it's a small group of people training anyway that are overly obsessed with this idea of being super hyper-focused on only the self-defense aspect. But, like, preparing for this fictitious fight where the fictitious fight might have been able to be avoided
mm-hmm.
if you just made better decisions in your life by whatever it is, you know. Don't borrow money that you can't pay back.
Sure.
Don't flirt on with somebody's boyfriend or girlfriend or mm-hmm. have an affair or whatever.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Don't.
But, you know, the fantasy scenario is like you're, like, walking down a dark alley
course,
and you get
yeah.
mugged, and that happens.
It does happen,
but
a lot
rare,
less.
And it's pretty easily avoidable, right, if you don't walk down dark alleys.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, like, again, those things happen, but I think that, I think that there needs to be a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, going back to what we were
talking about. Well, I actually wanted to address the opposite, right? Because you were talking about jiu-jitsu, you know, you said most purple belts probably defend this. I'd like to give you my karate opinion on that. And it's that I believe that the vast majority, and, you know, to give people some context here, takes, you know, what, like 6 years to get a purple belt, something like that, like an average?
So a black belt in jiu-jitsu, if you achieve a black belt in jiu-jitsu, on average, they say it's like 10 to 12 years to get
a purple belt. So purple belt's what, halfway?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say about
roughly,
5 years.
Yeah,
five or six years.
5 or 6 years of regular training.
Yeah.
So, like, we're talking about probably 5 to 6 years of you being at the gym
a minimum of 3 days a week.
Gotcha, yeah. Right? Okay.
So, yeah. So, like, you're probably putting in a minimum of 3 hours a week. A minimum.
Yeah.
But I would say that most people that are reaching Purple Belt are putting in, on average, more than 3 hours a week.
Yeah. To give you the, to transfer that over to karate, you know, karate belt system is based a lot on it being introduced to the universities in Japan, yeah. Right? So it would take about 4 years on average of, again, regular training to get a black belt. And then in my style, additional 2 years to get a second dan. So I would say like your average second dan in karate, how well are they able to defend themselves? And I would say probably not very well at all. Because, and...
So how many years did you say? How many years was that?
6 years, something like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I think if you do 6 years of any legit martial art, I think exactly. You're probably fine.
Well, all right, but here, but let's get, because we're going to bring this back to the purpose of the compliance aspect of it, right? I don't think that that's true. I would say so for the average, you know, karate practitioner has been training for about 6 years, I'd say they're probably not particularly, you know, well, you know, able to defend themselves in most situations because, and again, always painting with a wide brush here, a lot of different ways the karate is practiced. There's good karate out there where they certainly, I'd say that most people with that much experience are going to be in a position where they have skills to help them defend themselves. But because it's so common, karate, taekwondo, is that for compliance to be such a huge part of the training, where you spend most of your time kicking and punching the air, the drills that you do are often totally compliant, the sparring that you do, the aspect of your training that has resistance, sparring is often very restrictive in terms of rule set, right? It's very specific to rules, and it doesn't mean, you know, I'm an advocate of point fighting, sport karate type things. I think that it teaches good skills, but very specific skills because the rules restrict it so much. You know, point fighting makes you really good at getting in fast, right? Because you guys try to score that point and you get back out. Those are good point fighters. Guys that, and you actually see them make the transfer over to MMA. They get in and out really well. It's not that it doesn't teach good skills, but it's pretty limited in the skills that it teaches. To use another example, like boxing, for instance, like a decent boxer, somebody who's been training at a legit boxing gym for 6 years, I think that they're going to be able to defend themselves fine.
Yeah.
Because it's the opposite, right? They spend a lot of time hitting pads in a dynamic way, right? Whereas, yeah, they might hit the, you know, obviously hit the heavy bag, which is a stationary target.
And the the speed bag isn't stationary.
Yep.
Right?
So. No, it's not stationary. It's to develop the shoulders and the timing and stuff. But, you know, the I'm a big advocate of focus mitts, too. I think that they're great. I've been using them a lot more in my training and my teaching, and I think that they're great because it gives you a moving target. You're able to put combinations together in a very realistic way. And then the sparring that they do, you know, is more continuous, right, instead of the start-stop that you get with point fighting. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's just about how you train. And I would, and I'm of course know almost nothing about jiu-jitsu, but know a little bit about jiu-jitsu, but you know, I would agree with you that the average, you know, jiu-jitsu practitioner with a good amount of experience, like purple belt, even though there's big holes that they have in their guard, like somebody starts winging punches at their head and that's not something that they've trained for, it may shock and confuse them, but because they have a large piece of their training that is against resistance, meaning that, like, you know, like you're saying, the challenge is going to be covering the distance, getting in close, not getting, you know, knocked out or seriously hurt while you do that. But if they're able to do that and they're able to get somebody on the ground, right, then they're in a position where they have all the skills that they need,
and they might not even, again, you don't, it's not even necessarily getting it to the ground. Again, I think that sometimes gets confused, but again, that's another conversation.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
There's,
sorry, yeah,
there
yeah,
are there you. Are plenty of options
for
submissions without taking it to the ground.
Yeah.
There's plenty of takedowns that might end a fight without you going down to the ground.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so, well, that was actually an interesting one I read recently. They said that, you know, if the UFC was done on concrete, everybody would train judo. And I was like, that's an interesting.
So I actually disagree.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another tangent.
Because most of judo is dependent on the kimono.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think I actually think it would actually come back once again just to wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good point. Which is to be perfectly honest, based off where we're at right now with the current rule set, wrestling appears to be the ideal base for MMA, but that's a different conversation.
Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just one of those things that it's something that's very forward in my mind and that I try to think about a lot, that for whatever reason, you can look at the history to determine how it got to this point, but it's very common in the karate world and, you know, and by extension, the taekwondo world, probably kung fu, you know, like a lot of Chinese martial arts, that the compliance is so prevalent in the training that it's not even acknowledged and you forget that it's there.
Yeah. Right?
And you don't get to this, you don't have the same issue with jiu-jitsu or boxing. I'm sure that you can have the same issue, but it's not as common because it's built right in the resistance aspect of it. You know, if you're training with guys, even if you're not training for a boxing fight yourself, you're training with guys who are training for the ring like that. It's well established. It's like, oh, this has to work against resistance. But what you get in a lot of the martial arts is it's like, okay, I'm going to do this technique totally compliant on you, right? And we're never going to transition to a point where it's not compliant.
Yeah.
And the assumption is just going to be, well, it will work because if you did resist me, then I would just do it harder. And we can't do that in training because I'm going to hurt you.
Yeah.
And you get, and this is where you get into the mentality of the, like, too deadly to spar with kind of mentality. And I think that it's one of those things that's very it's important to me because it's so prevalent in the art that I've devoted my life to, that these things are cultural, like, you know, we kind of inherit them by practicing it. It's something that's always that you immerse yourself in, and it's hard to realize that it's even there. But really big one for me is just I try to always be aware of the compliance that I'm using in my training.
Yeah.
And I think that if you're more aware of that compliance and you start to integrate a little bit more resistance into it, you make whatever you're doing a lot more effective very quickly, you know. And that's just, you know, my thoughts on it.
All right. Well, on that note, we're done for today, but hopefully we'll be back sooner rather than later with another episode. And
yep,
my main thing to say to everybody is just train and have fun. Don't take any of it too seriously.
Yeah,
just train and have fun. Like, all the stuff will work out. Like, the reality is that if you want to do it and you want to be great at the sport, it's a long journey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's whatever the martial art is you're choosing. It's not like a 2-year commitment. It's not a 2-month commitment. It's a long term commitment. If you want to get good at the self-defense stuff, it's the same thing. It can't be like, oh, I want to train for self-defense in a fight, so I'm going to just train for 2 years. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle type thing, you know? You got to make it a part of your life. And,
exactly. So,
and at the same time, you know, and then you're a part of a community when you're training that way, and the enjoyment is something that shouldn't get overlooked. You know?
Yeah.
If you don't enjoy your training, what are you doing?
Exactly.
But anyway, yeah, I think before the pandemic, we were doing pretty well, where I think we released like 2 episodes a month. So, you know, get together and see what we can do. But yeah, I'd be excited to come back, start doing it again. But thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll have more for you soon. Thank you very much for listening. So like I said at the beginning of this podcast, that we will be coming back with more episodes. Dave and I were planning to start meeting regularly again to record. And I also have a lot of people who I'm planning to interview and bring on the show. A lot of people coming, especially from the karate world, which is something that we didn't do as much of before. But I'm really looking forward to the content that we're going to be bringing to this show. So stay tuned. We'll have more for you soon. Thanks.